All right, we are back with another episode of The Work Week After Hours. I am Shane Howard with my good friend and co-host,
Steve Cadigan.
All right, Steve, we're back. A lot going on in the world, a lot of negativity going on in the world. And it looks like maybe a little negative. We're going to dive right into. We typically kind of do a checkup. We're going to dive right into today's topic, I think. Sometimes we kind of try to play both sides of a topic, but there's been a little bit of negativity kind of creeping into the future of work that we're going to call the blowback of the Great Resignation, right? The blowback of the Great Resignation, I think is how you framed it earlier. Tell me a little bit about this story that you've come across that you kind of brought up to me, and let's dive into it a little bit.
You know, I was weighing in on this great thread on a LinkedIn post. This incredible guy, Tony Chapman, had thrown out there earlier in the week around Google. It was leaked that Google management has prepared a spreadsheet for all employees to self-serve, which essentially has a geographic target of your compensation. And so the company evidently said, was if you were hired in a certain region of the world to work in an office and you have now chosen to live in a different part of the world, wherever that is, we have now given you what the compensation target is for that part of the world. You need to self-select where you are and what your choice is, and that will be your new compensation. And apparently the variance was up to 25% reduction. Now, what wasn't mentioned was, you know, if someone wanted to move from, you know, the mountains, the Blue Ridge Mountains to San Francisco, they were going to get a big increase. Now, I don't know if anyone's done that, but so that caused a firestorm in some ways that I wasn't expecting was going to happen. The first one was, well, that's a pretty sneaky way of saying get back to the office. You know, like you're going to cut my pay. I thought we were more, you know, open-minded company, you know, speaking for on behalf of all the Google employees than that, but okay. And some people were like, well, Google people are already paid above market anyway, 25%. What difference does that make? Mm-hmm. But I think in this era of leaders being measured based on how they handle adversity, Google seems to have taken a pretty interesting stand. And I wasn't there in the room when the decision was made. But the piece of this that is most interesting is the frustration that I saw after this conversation came up there, and I also saw it in TikTok, was this frustration that, darn it, I don't care about what the Google employees, what happened to them. I care about the fact that my leadership and many others look to Google as a benchmark, and I'm fearful that my company's going to take the same move, and I don't like that move.
Yeah.
Isn't that fascinating?
No,
the power that Google wields as a benchmark, frightening people.
And right or wrong, right? Right or wrong, it's that's a very real thing. And you and I have actually touched on this a little bit. You know, there's always a double-edged sword to everything, right? Like, okay, you know, we could reference Silicon Valley being the innovators of work from home and remote work and hybrid work and flexible and thinking outside the box and hiring people without degrees and all of these different things. It can be a positive, right? We like there's some positive culture things that have come out of Silicon Valley. What we also, you know happens is there are, and maybe I'm wrong for saying this, but we definitely have more mediocre and bad leadership than we have good and great leadership. I think there's only so many great leaders out there, right? So so what happens is, and I've seen this even in sports in my time, I think we've seen it a lot in other demographics with other industries where people don't think for themselves, or they don't have the confidence to think for themselves. So they think that they have to mimic what other people do. I know you've talked about it as well, where, you know, a company will say, hey, we need you to come in, you know, we're having some things we'd love to get your view on or your pulse on, and how can you help us do what company X, Y, or Z is doing? And, you know, you reference it, you know, fairly openly, I know, on here of, well, it doesn't matter what they're doing. What's going to work for you?
Mm-hmm.
And it's all, like you said, we weren't there. So we don't know, like, was this a fear thing, right? Is this mm-hmm. their way of trying to scare the daylights out of people and say, okay, cool. Well, you don't want to do that. Now I'm going to play the devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
This isn't a new thing for a very vastly spread global company to pay people differently based off of where you work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Am I fair in saying that? Where So when you worked at Cisco, there were people in New York City getting paid different than when you moved and you were in Singapore, mm-hmm. right? Like mm-hmm. the pay is different, right? The pay is different. So this isn't a new thing. I think what's new about it, and ironically, this is wild. So you and I, when I was staying at your house a couple weeks ago, you and I were chatting in the kitchen, and I was sharing a story about when I worked in the car business and mm-hmm. Retroactive commission and pay. And it was, you were told, well, if you don't like it, then, you know, you can, there's the front door, right? It feels like, you know, again, we weren't there and we don't have context, so we can't, I don't think it's fair that we completely just annihilate leadership at Google. I don't think that's fair.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's what it feels like is saying, well, we feel like we've got the power. We feel like you don't have a choice because we pay you more money and we give you more things and it's nicer over here and your resume looks prettier because of our name and all these mm-hmm. things that if you don't like it, there's the door.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's one thing for it to be in place, and when you take the job, it's another thing to be in place and then say, oh, by the way, now, because you've made a decision that's best for you and your family, we're going to take something away and we're going to penalize you for it.
Yeah. There's so many layers to this. And this is, you know, having been running compensation programs for years in different organizations, I mean, every company's got their own philosophy. I think that, I mean, we could go so many different ways with this one. I think your premise is right. I think the quality of leadership is disappointingly low, and that's all on us. I think companies are built really fast and people want to make money quickly and they're not thinking about building a 100-year company and investing in great leadership, but that's another story for another episode. What's interesting about this one is Google saying, don't care. You know, this is how we're going to do it. Now, I support being clear what your plan is. The companies that are getting hammered right now are the ones who are wishy-washy, caught deer in the headlights, not sure, we'll get back to you, we'll take it under advisement. And I don't blame those people either, because none of us ever planned for this. None of us ever studied for this. None of us have the benchmark for this. And the frustration in part being aimed at Google is, you know, I know some people are going to look at what you did and think it's legitimate because people are putting the halo of you're the golden child of Silicon Valley. And so that must be legitimate. And you bring up a great point, which I've written articles about this. Don't benchmark against companies and people and industries that are not you. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so, you know, on the other side, I put my hat on when I was running talent at LinkedIn, and I look at what Google's doing, and I ask myself, in this climate, why would you give anyone the reason to be unhappy with you as an employer? Like, why would you introduce that? Now, I could also argue the same thing is, well, we're the company. It's our, you know, we decide how you're going to get paid. It's our choice. If you don't like it, then you can vote with what you do. The interesting thing for the company is going to be, well, what is going to happen? Because Google's not dumb. I mean, they do some dumb things. We all do some dumb things, but they're not dumb. They must feel we can find more talent. You know, that talent is not going to be super hard for us. Maybe, you know, and conspiracy theorists in me, maybe this is a pruning exercise for them. Maybe they're like, okay, let's do this. And some people are going to go and, you know, maybe we have too much headcount now anyway. I don't know. I doubt it.
Yep.
I doubt they would be that silly to go about it that way, because the most important thing an employer should be striving for is building trust. You know, it takes forever to build and it doesn't take very long to lose it. Yep. And this one seems like kind of Neil, like what happened there?
If all the information we have is correct.
That's right.
So I'm actually going to play devil's advocate again here for a minute. So yeah. What if this is Google's? So I think it's safe to say that Google has access to probably more analytical and behavioral data than any other entity in existence. So
of their employees, employee behavior
of their employees, but of humans in any like True. you talked about the days of if Google would have just made the move and said, well, we're going to make a LinkedIn clone, we would have been toast, right? Because they had all the data. Everything runs through them. Right.
And let's just pause for a second. Let me clarify for the audience who isn't, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid of technology like Shane and I are, probably maybe more than most, which is if you use Gmail, just so you know, you have checked a box at one point that anything that you write, that you receive, that is in your email, Google has access to.
Yeah.
So don't, you know, Shane will tell you the number of, you know, advertisements about Portugal that mysteriously showed up on his feed when he was starting to talk about going to Portugal wasn't an accident. And so you're right. They have access to enormous, probably so much so that it would probably frighten us if we really saw what they really
have. Okay. So is it not, you know, a Black Mirror conspiracy then to think and say that they know whether or not remote work and hybrid work is going to be a long tail thing or it's a fad, right? Mm-hmm. So I would, this actually very well could be them understanding and realizing and getting ahead and saying, you know what, this is going to be a long time thing. We have to adjust our financial model that makes sense, because those same people who moved to Kentucky from Silicon Valley, instead of making 200, now they're going to make 150. Well, that guy who's just as good, or that girl who's just as good, she'll be willing to work for us in Kentucky because she's never had to move, and she'll work for us for 140. Mm-hmm. So that, so I think, so again, we got it. Like, I think sometimes it's easy to like villainize somebody and something. Is there like, here's what I will tell you. Like what you just said in Gmail. I can type out an email in Gmail and it will start to predict the text and know what I'm saying. If we believe that they know whether or not people are talking, the behavioral analytics of what's about to happen, Google is aware.
Right. So let's take this another step. Let's take it another step, Shane. And this is, we're going to border, you know, we're going to get into the zone of insightful versus creepy. I have Grammarly. Okay. I'm a big fan of Grammarly.
I do too.
Wrote my book, used it. You can download it. And I found some problems with the product, and I sent a note to the CEO, and he said, thank you. We didn't know that. And here's a free year with Grammarly. So I was like, whoa, I wasn't doing that to get something from you, but thank you. Mm-hmm. Now I'm an even bigger fan. What they'll do, even in my little text box on LinkedIn, is say, your text is happy face. Yep. A little too serious.
I use it.
A little sense of urgency. They've mood tested it. I thought you were going to go somewhere in a second, but you didn't, and say, I doubt Google took this decision without having looked at the traffic of mood sentiment around decisions they make, around working in different places, around satisfaction or dissatisfaction with salary increase or relevance of salary increase. Like, this is a whole thing that, you know, I haven't written much about this, but it's crossed my radar, which is the increased recognition that all the commitment and sacrifice we make for, you know, a little promotion, a little more money, is now being exposed to being less interesting and attractive than it was pre-pandemic.
If you think that Google doesn't know that a certain percentage of their people have messaged and said, man, I am absolutely loving this. Shit, I would work for 30% less and keep doing that. If you think they don't know that, you are like, literally, there's like, I guarantee you they've tracked that.
Yep.
They know. So what, agree. That's kind of that behavioral data of people saying, like, man, like, if I could do this and I get to sit at home, like I'd do this for $100,000 a year, right? Like, so now all of a sudden, maybe realization was, every market has a correction. Right. Mm-hmm. It always does. the pay market has a correction, right? The Silicon mm-hmm. Valley pay has a correction. The housing market has a correction. Like, it's these things yeah. are going to happen. Maybe this is it. They have the data to know. They have the data to influence it too.
Right.
So that's the creepy part, to where are they influencing it, or are they being reactionary to what's happening in the market? Like, okay, right. people are leaving.
Yeah. So let me also use go. Man, I had no idea we're going to go on this.
I didn't either.
So fun.
I didn't either.
All right. So exhibit B in this whole discussion that we're having. The former head of human resources for Google, who was in that position for many years, is a gentleman named Laszlo Bock. Laszlo has since left, probably 3-4 years ago, and founded a company called Humu, H-U-M-U. Humu's business product, so keep in mind the pedigree of this individual, mm-hmm. Laszlo, and the team of people, I think a bunch of other Googlers followed him there, founded this company. This is what their business product is. It is a leadership nudge system that looks at your calendar. It looks at your emails. It looks at your activities and says, hey, Steve, Shane's one of your direct reports and you used to meet with him like 3 times a month. You haven't met with him in 2 weeks. You think it might be a good time to meet with him? It's looking at your behavior and making nudges and recommendations so you can be a more effective leader and you can be more aware, built upon looking at what you're doing. Now, someone could argue that's pretty constructive. But that's coming from someone who was at Google, probably had that insight, probably saw things going on there that, hey, if we could use this with their approval, the approval of the user, to help them, hey, you know, you used to hold meetings 3 times a week. Now you're not even holding them. You know, do you think maybe the team needs to get together? Or you celebrated the birthday of 3 people, but you didn't celebrate it for this person over here. What's up with that? You know, exposing some things in your behavior.
Yeah.
It would suggest that that's something they did a lot at Google, right?
Oh, yeah. It's like, hey, we notice every time you send a Slack message to this person, productivity for 4 days goes up 30%, right?
Well, right.
Like, okay. Like if we don't think those kind of data points exist, so this is where, I love this. First of all, I love this because with your book, Workquake, first of all, you have completely disrupted the HR landscape at a really high level. It's been really, really fun to watch and see all the comments. So, and one of the things that I think some people have tried to push back on, and I think this is where people, I think, miss the point of what you're saying in there. When you talk about the future of work is more human, right? You and mm-hmm. I are sitting here talking about AI and machine learning telling you need to be more human. Right. This isn't going to take over. It's telling you, hey, look, we know better than you now. Start being more human. Right. Mm-hmm. So even in what we're talking about, what Google is potentially doing, they're taking data that's saying, here's your human interaction of how we suggest, or here, not even we suggest, here's what's happening. You have mm-hmm. to now make a decision, a human decision, on how you interact with this individual, this team, your entire company, all of those different things. And I think mm-hmm. that is the point of the AI machine learning isn't going anywhere, but it's not here to replace. And this mm-hmm. is an example. And I think, I'm with you. We don't know, again, we're not there. Are we ever going to know? Probably not. Google's not going to come out and say, yes, mm-hmm. we've got a Google Doc that sits here and, you know, it's got all 37,000 employees listed in it and the zip codes of where yeah. they're at and the cost of living and the per diem. And, you know, we're right. not going to know that. Do they have yeah. that? Yeah, probably.
Yeah. And for me, honestly, I don't really care what the decision is for one organization. Sure. It's fascinating. It's interesting to me. And we talked about this a little bit last week. It's not really the decision that employees are going to look at right now. They're going to look at how'd you make that decision. Right? Did you go to the mountaintops and say, here's how it's going to be? And if that's your way of rolling, that's, you know, Jamie Dimon and, you know, JP Morgan, great. You know your business. That's how you're going to roll. Just thank you for being clear. Now, I have a decision set that I need to take into account to make the choices that I want to make, who I want to work with, and where I want to be. And what's really interesting here is I didn't see any employee survey mention in what Google decided to do. Maybe they already doing it, as you suggest, through all their insights into, you know, all the other decisions they've taken and how it's been received and not received. I just find that fascinating. And my recommendation to all the clients I'm working with is the most important thing right now is to be aware of how you're making big choices and try to engage, involve, listen, and adapt and adjust and course correct as we go through this, because the ground, as you mentioned, it's not firm yet and we're still working our way through it. And that collaborative, engaging leadership style, I think, is going to really serve you well, because nothing's prepared us for this. Like we were talking off air about this earlier. There's no benchmark for this. No. I mean, I went through SARS, but it wasn't like this. SARS was here and gone within probably 3-4 months. Now we're getting new variances. We've got the whole layer of political, you know, side taking and anti-vaxxers versus vaxxers and school districts and politicians and, you know, people wanting to, you know, we live in a society in the States here where we really want to find the blame. We want to point a finger and your fault. Yeah. And then we culture cancel them. And so it's not a constructive environment to be in. We talked a few weeks ago around a very different approach that you saw when you visited Portugal. But I think that just adds a layer of complexity here, suggesting take your time, be thoughtful, and be open around the fact you don't know how this is going to play out, but you're going to try to do the best you can.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. Let's take the other side of it. If I run a company, my job is to make this company as successful and profitable as I possibly can.
Yeah.
That is as the CEO of any company, that is your number one goal. Does that mean you have to be a, you know, Genghis Khan as you do it? Nope. There's some people have done it the Steve Jobs way, where they create this alternative reality of what's possible. And some people have done it, you know, the way that a lot of these other people out here who are being really open about things, you know, and really empathetic externally, right? It's not to say just because we don't see Google's CEO being empathetic externally doesn't mean he's not empathetic about it. Doesn't mean he's not caring. Doesn't mean those things. So here's something to think. Here's a number to think about. Google has 135,000 employees. Okay. First of all, it's a lot of employees.
Mm-hmm.
They expect 20% of its workforce to be completely remote by the fall. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking about, I don't know what the average salary is and all these different things, but we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. Okay. Mm-hmm. If all of a sudden we have to adjust, maybe they have to change their, like, again, there's so many different things. We don't know what they're doing, but there is, I could look at this and say, okay, well, if I'm going to have 40,000 people all of a sudden working remote, where 18 months ago before COVID hit, they were in an office and that's not the case. How am I going to have to manage that? Well, here's how I got to manage that. Is that going to cost me more money to manage? Maybe that's a cost that we see, right? We don't know. Like you said, we don't know yet. Maybe it costs more money to manage 40,000 people than it did. Like, it doesn't necessarily make it easier because you're remote. Like, there's different things, right? So these things are there. So I look at it and say, okay, is that the case? If you're living in Kentucky now, and if I were to hire you and you work there right now, what would your salary be? Mm-hmm. Right? Do I think it's fair to take away somebody's salary because they made, I think if they came out and said, this is going to be our policy, but we're going to take everyone's individual circumstance into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
Because what if somebody moved to Kentucky from Silicon Valley because they had two parents who got COVID and now they can't take care of themselves and they have to do that. Now, is all of a sudden, is that fair that that person now loses 20% of their pay? I don't think so. That's my opinion. That's, you know, it's not my money, so it's easy for me to say, but.
Well, the other thing that we should put out on the table there is for people who are listening who don't run a company or haven't seen the expense balance sheet, 90 to 95% of your costs in running a company is your payroll. It's not a trivial decision. It's not, you know, and when we were building LinkedIn, we're like, one of our ways of getting people to pay attention to us when they weren't interested in buying some sort of weird new recruiting solution is, so 90 to 95% of your costs are your people. How much how valuable is it to make sure you got the right ones? You're making the right choices. You're making the right hires. Was that pretty important to you to make sure that that 95% nut is important? Heck yeah. And I'd never step back. This is my first week on the job at LinkedIn. This guy, Brian Frank, who is running sales operations, he just outlined for me, this is our go-to-market. You know, it's really super interesting. And I was like, whoa, really? 95% of a company's fixed cost is the payroll and buildings are less, right? And so it is a meaningful element of your profit. And when you're getting crucified on your quarterly earnings calls, you know, that now you've got a chance to a moment in time where, hey, we can play this differently, right?
Yeah. So there's a reason why no matter it. So in the entrepreneurial world, it's something that you learn really, really quick. In the investment world, once you become an angel investor and a VC, you learn this as well. It's something you'll hear. I will tell you that the average individual contributor has probably never heard of what I'm about to say. But when you hear it, go do some math once I give you these numbers. So there is something that everyone looks at who invests in up-and-coming companies. There is one metric, every single one of them, that people look at, and that is revenue per FTE. Right? And that's full-time employee. So revenue per FTE. There is a number. There is an almost universal number that you can tell how successful and how funded a company is, even if you don't know their financials, if you start to do some math and there's a tipping point that happens at $115,000 per FTE.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So there is an actual number that where this happens, right? So yeah, we can look at Google and say, like you just said, it's great to look at Google and say, I don't know what their revenue is, but let's say it's $10 billion last quarter, right? Well, 10 billion divided by 135,000 all of a sudden starts to look a little different, right? Now All of a sudden, okay, they're doing really, really well. So what's average compensation? Well, their average compensation is more. So that 115 number is probably higher. To sure. where we're healthy or not. So that's how startups, successful startups that are generating revenue, they'll start to look at this and say, here's my revenue per FTE. So like you just said, your largest cost in any company, ask a local business owner who his largest bill collector is. And it is the payroll company every 2 weeks, because that's where a majority of his payroll comes. That's why you'll see a small business owner, you might walk in and all of a sudden he's there running and he's doing more things. Why? He's not paying himself any more money. He's mm-hmm. cut costs because that's the largest cost he can cut to still be operating and still maintain. So it's pretty interesting that you bring that up and how that crosses over. And we don't think about those. Well, most people don't think about those things when they're working somewhere. I wonder how successful we're actually being. I know the news reported we made a lot of money, but what does that FTE look like? What does that number, that revenue per, and it matters. And you're judged by that, right? Mm-hmm. You're judged by that in a sales world where, I mean, I don't know how you guys did it at LinkedIn, but you looked and said, okay, we're paying this guy X number of dollars. We need to get 15, 20X from what we're paying him. Otherwise, like, you know, the 80%, the 20% of the people make 80% of the money type thing starts to shift. These are all real things that actually occur. So yeah, I think it's, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. When you're balancing all those things, it becomes pretty clear how big that list is of things that you're balancing. So Google doesn't give stock to employees. They give what are called Google stock units. They refer to them as GSUs. Okay. And it is a phantom tracker that tracks a number that they've assigned to you, 10,500, 650, whatever it is, and say, however many shares in that proportion move up, whatever the value of that is, if it goes from 100 to 1,000, we times that by 650. And as you vest out, that's going to be the value to you. I didn't see anything on the spreadsheet. And by the way, in the long term, that makes your salary like a rounding error.
Yeah.
I will tell you, having been at a company, LinkedIn, when I joined, the stock was at 3 and change. And when I left, it was well over 100. my salary was a insignificant portion to my overall comp there, to the point where I took a big pay cut to go work there to begin with, because I said, okay, I'm not coming here for the cash. I'm coming here for the stock. Now, Google's a little bit down the road compared to hyper growth of its share price. And the truth is, a lot of people don't realize this. Microsoft's outperformed Google in the last 5 years at least, which is interesting on a stock-to-stock growth comparison. But you know, that's the piece that a lot of folks who aren't familiar with the full comp, they call it total rewards in HR.
Yes,
it's time off. It's retirement matching. In the US, we call it 401k. In Canada, they call it RRSP. In Australia, they call it superannuation.
Yep.
All those, you know, they're funding that. There is a bonus plan. There is a, you know, matching dollar if you give to philanthropic approved organizations. There's tuition reimbursement. There's all kinds of other stuff. I mean, as far as I know, Google is the market leader in all that crap. Because when I was recruiting against them, it was like, if you had a baby at Google, they would build a house for your in-laws in the backyard. That's kind of how it felt like. Here's a stroller. It's top of the line, $700 stroller.
And we laugh, but it wasn't far off. Like,
And so that's how it felt like. And my employees at LinkedIn would line up, hey, how come Google's got that and we don't? I'm like, because they're making money and we're not. So if that's what you want, okay, but we're building something earlier stage, and hopefully it's going to be something that changes lives and, you know, and so forth. But, but that's part of, you know, you have to look at the full picture. I do coaching for people who are just so focused on, you know, dollars. And I'm like, stop looking at the dollars, you know? And in the book, I quoted someone, I was super excited that you finally got to meet at the book launch party we had a couple of weeks ago. Bhaskar Ghosh, who was one of our big genius. Yeah. And he's now an investor in the Valley. And he says, you know, too many people focus on lifelong earning and not lifelong learning. And lifelong learning will lead to lifelong earning, but a lot of people are too focused on, I get my 2%, my 3%. And I think people are starting to wake up to, you know, you build your foundation, all that stuff's going to come. And I think Google employees, generally speaking, and this is, you know, it's ridiculous to overgeneralize, but I'm going to do that since it's our show. I don't think they care about that money as much as, is this setting me up to run a company someday? Is this setting me up to become more valuable in the future? Because I know I've got the Google brand, that money, whatever, but I'm going to be able to more than make that up if I make a move and someone's going to come at me and, you know, and make that worth it. So I don't think it's that big a deal, which gets me back to the big deal is being created by how people outside of Google are perceiving the fact that they're making that move with a whole different set of facts in their own company. Right.
Okay. So let's kind of bring this full circle to our viewers, right? We have a lot of people who are in the HR executive leadership space who follow this podcast, right? So they do. So the question I guarantee you is on minds of, okay, they're doing this. It causes you to think the same way it does. If I look out and I see my neighbor pull in with a Corvette, I start to think, how in the heck did he get that Corvette? Like, what's he got going on over there? Like, wait a second. He's already got two cars. Like, you know, it's human nature. We're curious, right? So if I'm leading a company, And if I've used Google for the benchmark of, you know, how we develop software and it's worked for me and how I've done, you know, our go-to-market strategy, or I read Salesforce's book and man, Mark, he's on it. He's really helped me. He's motivated me, but he's now doing this with compensation. I guess I got to do that too. That's human nature. And I get that. What would you tell people that are looking at this and that curiosity has crept into their brain and thought, what are we doing? What would be the first few steps before just jumping off a cliff into something that you don't actually have all the information of? What kind of advice would you share?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned this and bring this up. I was on a great call today with a firm that I'm going to be working with to speak to their leadership in the next couple of weeks. And we were talking about what's your issue? You know, do you have an issue right now? What's your concern? What's on your mind above and beyond whatever what's on everyone else's mind? And they said, well, turnover is really rising. And I said, okay, it's rising for everyone else. Is there something you feel is out of your control that's contributing to greater turnover? And like, not really. I said, are you above market? Yeah. And then I said, well, let me ask you, how has your profitability been during the pandemic? And they're like, it's improved. And I said, okay, I want you to connect those two things. Your turnover is increasing, and so is your profitability. I said, what does that make you, you know, kind of leading with some of the points that are in my book? It's like, what is that making you think? I said, or is it making you think differently? And so I saw this metamorphosis, Shane, of sort of movement from, oh my gosh, you know, feeling bad, all of a sudden like, well, hey, I never looked at it that way. And mm-hmm. And so to answer your question, if you're seeing this play out and you're not in the technology space or you are, and you're like, uh-oh, I think the first question we have to ask ourselves in this incredibly fluid time that we're in right now is, how are we creating value and what are the dimensions of that value creation that we think we could lever in ways that maybe raise our opportunity value, right? And stop looking, don't look at this like this is not a payroll. This is not a time for payroll dollars. This is not a time for, you know, trying to draw the lines tightly. Start with, how have we done during the pandemic? We become more profitable? Are we creating greater value? And I had a conversation last week with someone. They have created greater value, but the executive team believes people are burning out. And therefore, it is their responsibility to bring them back to the office. Mm-hmm. And that's just it was really interesting, mm-hmm. not surprising, interesting to me. So you think you're smarter than your employees and you know what's better for them than what they do. So you're going to save them from themselves and bring them back to the office. Mm-hmm. And I thought, and so this person was calling me saying, can you please come in and help me get my back with my executive team? Because I think this is a train that's ready to go right off the tracks, you know? And he wasn't sure what to do about it, but that's how I would frame this is, this is a very complicated deal. I think it's, you know, focus on, we're here to create value. I love the way you framed that as a CEO, like we're here to create value. We assumed the only way we knew how to do it was in person. Now we've been proven, maybe we can do it better. Maybe we have a bigger addressable talent market. Maybe there's different ways of doing this. And maybe there's even better ways of doing it than we haven't even discovered yet, right?
Yeah. And this happens. When I take these calls of people like, hey, you know, we've seen Steve's stuff. We need Steve to come in. He's speaking our language. Like, he's speaking to what's happening. Can he come speak to our leadership team? And it's always wild to me how they'll say, well, what would he like to come in and speak on? And my first question is, well, wait a second. We want to bring you as much value as possible. Like, I mean, we got a lot of topics we'd love to come in and just, you know, force feed down your throat, but that's not going to bring you any value, right? Like, what do you're reaching out to us. So tell us what you need, right? It's kind of like going to a doctor. You don't go to the doctor and sit down and the doctor walks in and he says, all right, Steve, tell me what you need. What do you need a prescription for? What kind of procedures would you like me to line up for you? Tell me what you need and then we'll make that happen. No, I need to know your symptoms. I need to know what ailments you have. I need to know what's going really good in your life. So I can, like, to correlate, like when you said that earlier about the company who said we're more profitable with higher turnover, the first place my mind goes is, well, maybe you got rid of a bunch of bad salespeople and the new salespeople have come in and they're really hungry and maybe that's what you need to do. Right. So it's like, why is turnover like as a single data point, it doesn't tell your whole story. Like there's no, and probably in no greater time in history does it not tell your whole story.
Right.
Right. So yeah, I just think like you got to know what, like it's so like ask for what you want, ask for what you need, communicate. Mm-hmm. And you know, that would be my suggestion. I'm seeing it on a different level. I guess I'm kind of vetting these people before you get to sit down and have these big in-depth conversations with them. But it's like, hey, like, what do you need? Tell us what you need, because this might not, maybe we're not the doctor for you. Maybe you need an ophthalmologist and not a, you know, not a cardiologist, right? Like let's figure out what's happening here. And I think, again, it goes back to, if you're willing to ask your customers how they feel and what they need from you so that you can provide a better product, and you don't do the same internally,
yeah,
you're kind of missing the point. You're missing an unbelievable opportunity to create an amazing place to work. I genuinely believe that. I genuinely do.
Yeah. You know, later in the conversation I was having with the same client earlier today, Shane, I said, okay, is there any, one of the parts I like to do, and it's out there, so you just have to make sure you understand what it is. Is there any landmine that you want to make sure I don't step on when I'm talking to your people? Because I'm not in your world, right? But if there's a word or a subject's going to trigger, you know, anger or people to tune out, what is it? Like, no, there's not. I said, okay, because I've given talks in communities where, like, if you say the word millennial, like, everyone's going to throw up on you. So don't use that. I'm like, okay, well, why? Help me understand. So it's really great. And this is the hardest part, honestly, of being an individual out on their own, having built a career, being really good at understanding a system from the inside. It's like, when I'm on the inside, I'm seeing how the system works under pressure, when times are good, when times are bad, how different leaders handle different situations. I'm so much more effective. When I'm coming out on the outside, I'm not. But there's this halo of, I know everything. It's like, when you're on the inside, people don't think you know anything. Trust me. This is why I don't call myself a consultant, because I hated those people. They said what I said, and my leaders believed them when I was saying the same thing, but because they're an external consultant, it was much more believable. But be that as it may, they did say one thing. They said, please, whatever you do, we're fearful that the leaders are not owning the reality today. And they're going to say, well, HR should do that. HR should fix the culture. HR should fix diversity. HR's responsibility for wellness. And I said, well, did you tell them that their employees don't work for you? They work for them. And it's their... And they go, yeah, that would be really good. Yeah, say that. And so that was the only thing that they were fearful of. And this is, I think, a good lesson. And I've fallen prey to being that, the victim of leadership saying, yeah, recruiting's not working because, you know, HR is all messed up over there, a bunch of knuckleheads. I'm like, well, you're hiring people to work for you, not for me. My team's here to help you, but you own that.
Yeah.
If you're not happy with the quality of my service, that doesn't mean, you know, we're entirely responsible for a broken system, right? And it's just, this is back to what I said earlier. People under stress want to deflect ownership and want someone else to try to cover it. And the pandemic's been the ultimate revealer of leadership. And so we've seen some great things and we've seen some really atrocious things. And we're going to continue to see that play out the longer this goes. And I hope, you know, I don't hope this continues, but I hope we use this opportunity right now. You know,
it's such, like, you know, you talked about it a couple of weeks ago or a couple of episodes ago about being an experiment, right? And this is that opportunity. And you just, like, again, it goes back to communication, right? Like, I don't, like, if you're a parent, you don't, I hope you don't. I was at your house for a week, right? I don't all of a sudden just go home like, oh, I saw Steve. That's how he parents. Well, I'm going to go home. I'm going to do the same thing to my kids. Cause that, like, that's not going to work. Right. Or you see how somebody talks to their wife. It's like, oh, well, I'm going to go home and talk to my wife like that. Well, that might not work for you. Right. Like, it's so, you know, it's not going to be the greatest of experiences. Right. So
yeah,
that's certainly not going to work at a company of 5,000 people and a bunch of different personalities and, you know, diversity and location. Like, it's just not like we almost as leaders, we got to take a step back, take a deep breath and say, okay, let's not look for the conventional ways that we normally would to assess the situation. What are some unconventional data points that we're missing? And, you know, where it's easy to go look at turnover. That's we're like bloodhounds. That's exactly the first place you go, which maybe that's covering up something else. Like, let me see revenue generated now per salesperson. Is it up? Oh, holy cow, it's up. So maybe there's more leads. So maybe we didn't have enough business for as many salespeople that now we've trimmed that down because they've left because they weren't getting enough to eat. And now we've got the right sweet spot of people. Like, those things are way more intriguing to me than who's leaving and going. Everybody's going to leave and go.
Yeah. And crisis does provide opportunity. I mentioned this to you, Shane. One of the companies I work with is in the background check space. And when the pandemic hit, we're like, oof, recruiting's going to stop. Background checks are going to stop. Oh, no. You know, we're in trouble. And then we found, much to our pleasant surprise, companies were taking the opportunity to retool their systems when things were slower. And they were so busy for so long, they didn't have a chance. They knew, I need to get to that when things slow down. Things have slowed down and people are looking to switch out providers, improve and upgrade systems. And we're like, okay. So the per order volume didn't go up, but the number of new customers went up, and that mitigated the fact that people were recruiting less, but we had more new customers, which is kind of, that was counter to what we thought was going to play. And I think that, you know, that's the hard part now, because we don't know what the next play is. Yeah. We can't see the future as predictively as we used to. So, you know, this is why, you know, you mentioned earlier that investor model. I want to challenge you on that a little bit. Not okay. you, but I want to challenge the model. Like full-time employees. I think one of the things that's happening over the pandemic is more contract companies are getting more of that contingent workforce, because it's safer, it's less carried cost, and I can ride an uncertainty with this more of like a shock absorber pool of people, right? And
I agree.
How does that factor in? Like, there must be sort of like an additional labor dollar pool somewhere on the balance sheet.
I'll send it to you so you can look into it. Yeah. So I think that's the thing, right? So to that point. So I just told you a very large generalization of what a very large group of the entrepreneur, startup, small business, growing business uses as a benchmark. Now they've been thrust into a world to where now that benchmark no longer adds up. So that's what I'm saying. Like, it's this thing of like, holy cow, like where is my number? Where is that sweet spot? We always have enough data to figure out certain trends. The problem is right now, this whole work quake that's happening, everything's still shaking. Like, it hasn't settled yet, so we can assess the damage. Yeah. Right. So we're still trying to understand. And that's where, you know, you framed it very early on as the great career migration. Mm-hmm. Right. So that great career migration of what's the blowback of that? Is the blowback always negative? It could be positive. Right. This company is seeing an uptick in revenue, and it's a positive. It's feels like a negative because we're emotionally attached to our people. It feels like a negative because people are leaving, and I feel like it's personal, but our revenue and our balance sheet's going up. So what correlation does that have?
Right.
And then we're now in a place of where now it's more valuable than ever to treat people how they should be treated, even when they leave and to leave and to go. And all those, it all comes full circle. This is why, man, I told you this in a text. This is why I love this journey that we're on, because I feel like in a very, and I think we're able to do this because you're not at a company right now that we're able to have a very unbiased 360 view. You don't have a balance sheet and investors to have to answer to skew your view. And I think that's why it's so valuable for these companies to come in. And you said something earlier that I want to recall back before we wrap this up. You said a part of it being an individual on the outside coming in to help solve problems is a little bit more difficult. I agree. I would say that is very, very hard. But I think because of your experience in the companies that you had to be ever evolving and operating almost as your own CEO in your own department when you were growing as fast, to go from 3,000 or 300 to 4,000 employees over a 3.5 year span, you have to make a lot of decisions that you don't run by everybody, right? Like you're a CEO. So to do that, you develop the skill set that allows you to see the trends that you're able to see now. And because you're involved in working with so many companies, from Fortune 50 companies to, you know, startups and that are operating out there, I think it gives you a view of a world and a future of work that not a lot of people have access to. So I think that's why, you know, for me, at least, 'cause I get to see it, I get to hear the pain points, and then it's like it's almost to the point now in my head. I'm like, I know exactly what Steve's going to say to this. Like I can, like I know, like these, like I know exactly I'm what sorry. He's about to say. No. In a good way. I'm like, because they're like, do you think this is something he can talk us through? And I'm thinking, well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I think we can. Like this is actually it's a no brainer, right? It's a no brainer. So I think that's why that and it goes back to that experience in Silicon Valley created. You honed that. And I think that's why it's so valuable for you to share your knowledge and your insight because I'm not tooting your horn. That's not what this is for. Like it just so happens this is what we're talking about. And there's other people like you that exist and all those different things that, I think that's why. I think
And we've said this before and I've said it before. Like I live here. There's a lot of love about Silicon Valley. There's a lot that's messed up, wrong, broken. And I think there's over index around, if it happened there, it's the right thing to do. But I do think that the massively competitive environment fosters enormous creativity here. It forces you to. That's how we stumbled on culture being our competitive advantage at LinkedIn, not because we were the smartest people in the room, but because we were forced to come up with something that was going to allow us to draw talent in. Yeah. And I never been more stressed out in my life, never been more excited, never had a bigger chance to move the needle on something than that experience, right? And it was really, really great. But I was thinking back, Shane, you and I were both big sports fans. Anyone listening knows that. One of the biggest stories in the world of sports right now, and I'm going to connect this to what we've been talking about, is an employee departure that happened 3 years ago in the Bay Area here, or 2 years, 3 years ago. That's still being talked about.
I was Kevin just Durant. I was thinking about this earlier. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So there was a whole podcast that Draymond Green and Kevin Durant were talking about, like, well, why did you leave and what were the terms and what were the conditions? And it got me thinking, that was, you just said a few minutes ago, like, we need to really rethink when someone leaves, like it impacts our brand. And I mean, they're in a different stratosphere in terms of the press follows them and every move they make, people write about it. But it is interesting that here we are 3 years after someone left and there's still debate of how it played out, who the ownership was, whose the responsibility was, right?
So essentially for those that don't follow this, let me reframe this in a business world. Two employees had a disagreement who are high level employees at an organization.
Key employees.
Two of the highest paid payroll expenses for this entire company, right? We're talking about $20+ million a piece a year. Okay. Mm-hmm. They had a disagreement. One, there's no other like him. There's no other person you can replace in your, in your team, on your company, that one, maybe you can replace, but he brings factors outside of a natural skill set that you can't teach that would be not as hard to replace. They have this disagreement and they came together privately and started to resolve it, but the company wouldn't listen to him. The company had a better idea and a better thought process of how it should. And these two grown men sat across from each other and said, one still works at the company. One no longer works at the company. And they both said, yeah, our leadership screwed it up. He would probably still be here. We would have won 5 more championships. Our leadership screwed it up. They screwed it up because they didn't listen to us. They didn't listen. And that was, it's one of those things. So
yeah,
man, this has been good, Steve. Blowback of the great resignation, man, it's going to keep it up too.
And we have so much more we can talk about in the future weeks. We're going to keep seeing stuff like this play out. It's super fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we need to find. So listen, if you're a listener and you've listened this far, you're obviously a dedicated listener. One, Steve has mentioned before, make sure you go like, comment, subscribe, share it with your friends. When you see our clips, share those out too. But if you maybe fit one of these roles that we've talked about and you potentially want to be a guest or you want to come on and maybe offer your insight, we'd love to have you on.
Or if you have a guest you'd like to recommend.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We'd love to have you on. as long as you're willing to be transparent and open up, you know, we'll, it's a safe space, and we'd love to dive into some of these topics with somebody else. So Steve, has been good, man. I love it. I love kind of getting back into our cadence of hopping on here and doing this.
Yeah. You know, it just occurred to me, Shane, for an upcoming episode, and we're running low on time, so we can't get into it now, but I want to talk about basketball some more and how that is a great metaphor for us to learn from relative to the world of work changing, and particularly the three-pointer. And as a kids basketball coach in the last 15 years, how enormously frustrating it is to teach basketball when everyone thinks the glory is chucking up a three when they can't even make a free throw. And how that's changed strategies, it's changed the game, it's changed how coaches have to coach, strategize, and everything. And I think there, that may be something that we could get into that allows us to talk about two things we love, you know, world of work and, sure, and the world of sport. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this has been the Work Week After Hours. I am Shane Howard.
And I'm Steve Cadigan.
Thank you, guys. We'll catch you on another episode.